We present Watto Jeeves by P.G. Wodehouse. Michael Horton as Jeeves and Richard Briers as Bertie Wooster in Joy in the Morning, with Jonathan Cecil as Boko Fittleworth and Denise Breyer as Edwin the Boy Scout. Episode 2, Steeple Bumpley.
On the morning of my departure for Steeple Bumpley, Hampshire, home of my uncle by marriage, Percival Lord Worplestone, I will not deny that a certain coolness of the feet unquestionably existed. The purpose of my visit was to take possession of a cottage called Wee Nook, in order that Uncle Percy could conduct business meetings there unobserved by the financial press. And though this in itself was a decidedly scaly prospect, old Worplestone not being the sort of blister one would wish to have infesting one's home at the best of times, what really plunged me down among the wines and spirits was the knowledge that I would also be in the vicinity of the gang of plug-uglies he called his family. But they were hot stuff, these offspring of Worplestone's first marriage. His daughter, Lady Florence Cray, to whom I had been engaged a short time before, but who was now affianced to my old pal Stilton Cheesewright, was a brisk, censorious young pancake, more like someone training on to be an aunt than anything human, while her brother, Edwin the Boy Scout, was a loathsome little snurge given to doing acts of kindness out of sheer malevolence. In fact, the only reasonably brashish spot in the whole set-up was that my Aunt Agatha would not be on the strength during my visit, and I mentioned this to Jeeves as he entered my room that morning with a steaming bohee.
Yes, sir. Her ladyship expects to be absent for some little time, until Master Thomas, your cousin, has recovered from his attack of mumps, sir.
Ah, so she may be away during the whole of my sojourn. Ah, thank you, Jeeves.
Quite conceivably, sir.
That is a substantial bit of goose.
Yes, sir, and I am happy to be able to indicate another. In the course of her visit yesterday, Miss Hopwood mentioned a fancy dress ball, which it appears is to take place tomorrow at East Wibley, the market town adjacent to Steeple Bumpley. You will enjoy that, sir.
I shall indeed, though I say it myself, as a dancer, I outfred the nimblest astair. Well, I must say this has brightened the horizon considerably, Jeeves. When I have breakfasted, I will go out and buy a costume. Sinbad the Sailor, don't you think?
That should prove most effective, sir.
Not forgetting the ginger whiskers that go with it.
Precisely, sir. They are of the essence. Incidentally, sir, I should have mentioned that her ladyship rang up a short while ago.
What? Aunt Agatha?
Yes, sir. But merely to leave a message saying that she wishes you to call in at Aspinall's in Bond Street before you leave and secure a brooch, which she purchased there yesterday.
Oh, she does she? Well, why me?
I understand that the trinket is a present for Lady Florence, who is celebrating her birthday today, sir. Her ladyship wishes you to convey it to its destination personally, realizing that should she entrust it to the ordinary channels, the gift will be delayed in its arrival beyond the essential date.
You mean, if she posts it, it won't get there in time?
Precisely, sir. Her ladyship appeared a little dubious as to your ability to carry through the commission without mishap.
Oh!
But I assured her that it was well within your scope.
I should think so, Jeeves. Even I'm not such a silly ass that I can't deliver a brooch.
No, sir.
So it's Lady Florence's birthday, is it? This opens up a social problem on which I should be glad to have your opinion. In view of the fact that it was she who broke off our engagement, ought I to weigh in with a present?
No, sir.
Not necessary, you think?
No, sir. Not after what has occurred.
I'm glad to hear you say so, Jeeves. I don't wish to give the Beazle the impression that Bertram is a glamorous gift-bestower as well as a budding intellectual.
Sir?
Well, didn't I tell you? I met her in a bookshop yesterday, and she fat-headedly got the idea that I was buying a copy of her recently published novel. Dashed embarrassing. She insisted on autographing the bally thing for me, thus putting me 7 bob and a tanner down before the day started.
Most unfortunate, sir.
Absolutely. No birthday present for La Cray, then?
No, sir.
Well, just as well, I fancy. It wouldn't do to stir Stilton up again. A jealous bimbo, that Cheesewright Jeeves.
Sir?
Well, you remember, I met him yesterday, too, buying the engagement ring. But when I let slip I knew Florence, he snarled at me like a Rocky Mountains timber wolf.
Indeed, sir.
Yes, he's clearly one of those touchy lovers. Othello is the name that springs to mind. However, on the subject of Steeple Bumpley engagement, did Nobby tell you that she and Boko Fittleworth are planning to leap in among the orange blossoms too?
Yes, sir. Miss Hopwood was kind enough to confide in me when she called yesterday morning. I'm sure I wish the young lady and gentleman every happiness.
Well spoken, Jeeves. Me too. Has Nobby named the day, do you know?
I believe not, sir. On the contrary, the young lady appeared somewhat pessimistic as to whether the nuptials would take place at all.
Not take place at all?
Exactly, sir.
Jeeves, are you pulling the Worcester leg? What on earth do you mean?
It appears that Lord Worplesdon disapproves of the match, sir, and being the young lady's guardian, he has, of course, the power to prevent her marriage without his consent.
Golly! Why the devil does he disapprove? Has the old buster an anti-Boko complex or something?
Precisely, sir.
Well, the man must be cuckoo. Boko is one of our most eligible young bachelors.
But Mr. Fittleworth is a writer, sir, and according to Miss Hopwood, his lordship is suspicious of men of letters as a class. He does not believe in their solvencies.
But Boko makes pots of money. You see his stuff everywhere. And they were saying at the Drones the other day that he's had an offer to go to Hollywood.
So Miss Hopwood informed me, sir. Nevertheless, his lordship is in possession of the idea that an author's success is, by nature, somewhat transient.
You mean he thinks that Boko's earning capacity may go fut at any moment?
Exactly, sir. In addition, his lordship was apparently prejudiced against Mr. Fittleworth from the inception of their relationship. On sartorial grounds, I believe, partly, sir.
But a man's an ass. All right, Boko looks like an intellectual parrot and dresses like a tramp cyclist who's been left out in the rain overnight in an ash can. But he is, as you say, a writer. Uncle Percy must know that writers are allowed a wide latitude. They all wear grey flannel bags with patches on the knee. Besides, trousers aren't everything. I'm sorry, Jeeves, but they're not. Is that all Uncle Percy had against him?
No, sir. The real cause of his lordship's prejudice, I am informed, was that he considered Mr. Fittleworth to be a butterfly.
A butterfly? Boko?
Yes, sir. Flitting from flower to flower and sipping.
Sipping? Jeeves, you have me fogged. What on earth has put this extraordinary idea into Uncle Percy's head that Boko's a flitting sipper?
The matter is susceptible of a ready explanation, sir. It seems that when the young gentleman arrived in Steeple Bumpley a few months ago, he was engaged to be married to another young lady.
Who?
Lady Florence Cray, sir.
What?
Yes, sir. In fact, it was she who made him settle there.
Engaged to Florence? Jeeves, not long ago I was engaged to Florence. Then, if your story is to be credited, Boko was, and now Stilton is.
Yes, sir.
Don't you find that absolutely extraordinary? It's like one of those great race movements you read about.
Yes, sir.
Well, I suppose it's her profile that does it. She has a lovely profile, seen from the left. Seen from the right, too, for the matter of that. But would that account for it, do you think? I mean, in these busy days, you can't spend your whole time dodging round a girl trying to see her sideways.
Scarcely practicable, I agree,
sir. Anyway, that was what made Uncle Percy a bit frosty to Boko.
Yes, Miss Hopwood described his lordship's manner as glacial.
Well, one can see his point of view, of course. He frowns on all this in-and-out running. But I say, here's a thought. How old does Nobby have to be before she can marry without Uncle Percy's KO?
21, sir.
But she's 20 now. There you are. She only has to wait another year, and she can defy the old buzzard.
That point had not escaped me, sir. However, according to Miss Hopwood, Mr. Fittleworth will be leaving for Hollywood next month. The young lady confided to me that she was not happy at the prospect of the young gentleman residing in that region of the western United States of America without a wife at his side. She considers her presence necessary, sir, if I may quote the young lady verbatim, to distract his attention from the local fauna, sir.
Jeeves, I am shocked.
Sir?
There can be no love where there is not perfect trust, Jeeves.
If you will forgive my saying so, sir, Miss Hopwood would not agree with you. While the young lady in no way questions Mr. Fittleworth's probity, it is her view that his impulsive nature might lead to his forming another attachment inadvertently. Apparently, the young gentleman cannot say no, sir. Miss Hopwood believes that that is what occurred when he became engaged to Lady Florence Cray earlier this year.
Oh, Boko is rather an impetuous sort of bird, that's true. Yes, in fact, now you've explained it, I quite understand the position, Jeeves. It's decidedly tricky.
Exactly, sir.
Did you have anything to suggest as a way out of the impasse?
Regrettably, no, sir.
Well, something must be done. Ah! Bingo! I've got it, Jeeves. I've had an inspiration.
Sir?
Listen. By establishing myself at Wee Nook on his behalf, am I or am I not doing Uncle Percy a dashed good turn? So dashed, indeed, that if he has a spark of gratitude in him, he ought to be all over me.
Indubitably, sir.
If this Bally merger comes off, he ought to clasp my hand and ask if there's any reward I would like, as he can deny me nothing, what?
Certainly, sir.
Very well. Then, at that juncture, I will draw him aside and plead Nobby's cause, softening the old bird's heart and making him take the big broad view.
Yes.
It can't fail, Jeeves. I should probably play on the old crumb as on a stringed instrument.
Yes.
Excellent. That's settled, then. And now, Jeeves, I fear I must get up. You'll be wanting to make a start on the packing. We'll drive down after lunch, if that suits you.
Possibly it would be best, sir, if I were to make the journey by train.
A bit haughty, this exclusiveness, is it not, Jeeves?
I should have mentioned, sir, that Miss Hopwood rang up earlier, hoping that you would be able to accommodate her in your car. Assuming that I should be falling in with your wishes in doing so, I took the responsibility of replying that you would be quite agreeable.
Yes, that's all right. Right-ho then, Jeeves. Unchain the eggs and bacon, and I will be with you in a moment. On our way down to rural Hampshire a few hours later, I informed Nobby of my plan to put in a word for her with Uncle Percy, and she registered an appropriate amount of girlish joy at the prospect of a happy ending. On arrival in Steeplebumpley, I decanted her at the gates of the hall, and, feeling in need of a refresher, decided to stop off at Boko's and touch him for the needful before proceeding to Wee Nook. Driving down the lane, which Nobby had indicated, I assumed that the whitewashed cottage standing on the river bank must be the Bokeries, and hove to accordingly. Noting that the French windows at the side were open, I approached them and whistled. There was a hoarse shout from within, and then a small china ornament whizzed past, coming within an ace of copying me on the napper. I uttered a startled yelp, and as if in answer to the cry, Boko appeared at the window. His hair was disordered, and his face was flushed, presumably with literary composition.
Good Lord! Bertie! Is that you?
The very same. Hello, Boko.
Golly, I'm sorry about bunging china ornaments at you, but why the blazes were you imitating the note of the lesser screech owl? I thought you were young Edwin. He comes sneaking round here trying to do me acts of kindness, and that's how he always announces his presence. I'm never without a certain amount of ammunition handy on the desk. Well, come in. Where on earth did you spring from?
The Metropolis. I've just arrived.
Well, you might have had the sense to send a wire. I'd have killed the fatted calf.
I haven't come to stay with you, Boko. I'm hanging out at a cottage which they tell me is a little further down the road.
Wee Nook?
That's right.
Have you taken Wee Nook? What made you suddenly decide to do that?
Oh, well, my lips are by way of being sealed. I'm doing something rather secret for Uncle Percy. Let's just say Jeeves thought he would like to do a bit of fishing, what? And now, old bean, how about a cooling snifter? The journey has left me a little parched.
Ah, righto.
They tell me you're engaged, Boko. Congratulations and all that rot.
Thank you. Did, Nobby tell you?
She told Jeeves, yes.
And, did she explain what the position was?
About Uncle Percy gumming the works, you mean? Oh, rather.
A nice bit of box fruit. What? Fancy having to get anyone's consent to your getting married in this enlightened age. The thing's an anachronism. Why, you can't use it as a motive for a story, even in a women's magazine nowadays. Mud in your eye?
Down the hatch.
You have brought Jeeves, I take it.
He's following with the heavy luggage.
How is he these days?
Fine.
Brain all right?
Colossal.
Then he may be able to think of some way out of this mess.
Well, we shan't need Jeeves, Boko. I am handling the whole thing, you see. I'm going to get hold of Uncle Percy and plead your cause.
You? I thought the man scared you stiff.
He does. But as I said, I'm in the throes of doing him a good turn, and my drag with him is now substantial.
Well, that's fine. Snap into it, Bertie. Though, I'm afraid you've got rather a tough job.
Oh, I don't know.
I do, after what happened at lunch today.
Lunch?
Nobby asked me to give old Warbleston lunch today. She thought if we could only get together for a space, the old boy might learn to love me. God bless her optimistic little soul.
Well, didn't it go well?
Not too well, no. The whole idea was a mistake from the start, Bertie. She should never have brought us together. And if she had to bring us together, she ought not to have told me to be bright and genial.
Why did she do that?
Well, she said I was inclined to be a bit stiff in my manner with the old Bert. I've frequently explained that I'm always stiff in my manner with elderly gentlemen who snort like foghorns when I appear and glare at me as if I was somebody from Moscow distributing red propaganda. It's a sensitive, highly strung artist in me. Old hardened arteries doesn't like me.
So I heard. Well, go on. I mean, you were saying you made a bloomer in trying to be bright and genial.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's right. Yes, I did, yes. And this is how it came about. I wonder, Bertie, if you were present one day at the Drones Club when Freddie Widgeon sprang those joke goods on the lunchers there.
Joke goods?
Yes, the things you see advertised in toy shop catalogues as handy for breaking the ice and setting the table in a roar. You know, the plate lifter, the dribble glass, the surprise salt shaker.
Oh, yes! yes! I remember those. Cat's Meat Potter Purbright was suffering from a hangover, and he picked up a roll, and a rubber mouse ran out of it. Strong men had a rally round with brandy. Poco, you aren't telling me you worked those off on Uncle Percy?
Yes, Bertie. That's what I did.
Golly!
That about covers it.
Golly! But why, Boko? Why?
Well, I suppose the idea at the back of my mind was that I ought to show him my human side.
Did he take it big?
Pretty big.
He didn't like it?
No. I can answer that question without reservation. He did not like it.
Has he forbidden you the house?
We don't have to forbid people houses after looking at them as he looked at me over the surprise salt shaker. The language of the eyes is enough. Do you know the surprise salt shaker? You joggle it, and out comes a spider. The impression I received was that he was allergic to spiders.
I see. Yes. I think I'll be pushing along, Boko.
What's your hurry?
I ought to be going to Wee Nook. Jeeves will be arriving at any moment with the luggage, and I shall have to get settled in.
Oh, righto. I would come with you, only I'm in the act of composing a well-expressed letter of apology to my Lord Worplesdon. I'd better finish it. Though it may not be needed if all you say about being in a position to plead with him is true. Plead well, Bertie. Pitch it strong. Let the golden phrases come rolling out like money. For as I say, I don't think you've got an easy job on your hands.
No, Boko. Quite. Goodbye. My mood, as I set course for Wee Nook, was, as you may well suppose, a good deal less effervescent than it had been. The idea of pleading with Uncle Percy had lost practically all its fascination. But I tried to hold the thought that once the merger had gone through, joy would most likely reign so supreme that the old bounder would look even on Boko with the eye of kindliness. And it was as I was doing this that there came the ting of a bicycle bell, and a voice calling my name, Woostering with such vehemence that I immediately braked the car and glanced round. The sight I saw smote me like a blow. Heaving alongside was Stilton Cheesewright, and on his face, as he alighted from his bicycle and confronted me, there was about as unpleasant a look as ever caught me in the eyeball. It was a look pregnant with amazement and hostility, a gore-blimey, what's this blighter doing here look, and I could follow what was passing in his mind as clearly as if it had been broadcast on a nationwide hook-up. All along, I'd wondered what this Othello's reactions would be on discovering me in the neighbourhood. Admittedly, Stilton was no thinker. At Eton, he'd been captain of boats, and he'd rowed assiduously at Oxford. His entire formative years, therefore, had been spent in dipping an oar into the water, giving it a shove, and hauling it out again. Only a pretty dumb brick would fritter away his golden youth doing that sort of thing, which, in addition to being silly, is also a deuce of a sweat. And Stilton Cheesewright was a pretty dumb brick. A fine figure of a young fellow, as far northways as the neck, and above that, solid concrete. However, even he, I imagined, could put two and two together, and it was almost inevitable, I felt, that my arrival in Florence's vicinity should smack of young Lochinvar coming out of the west. And, of course, my lips being sealed, I couldn't explain. In fine, a delicate and embarrassing situation. And yet, what caused me to goggle at him now was something else entirely. Stilton Cheesewright had turned into a country copper.
Stop my vital, Stilton. Why the fancy dress?
What the hell are you doing here, you bloodstained Worcester?
This is no time for side issues. Why are you got up like a policeman?
I am a policeman.
A policeman?
Yes.
When you say policeman, do you mean policeman?
Yes.
You're a policeman?
Yes, blast you, are you deaf? I'm a policeman.
I see. You're a policeman. How utterly priceless. Stilton, put me down, please.
Why shouldn't I be a policeman?
Oh, rather.
Half the men you know go into the police nowadays.
Well, Stilton, I shall watch your future progress with considerable interest.
Oh, to blazes with all that. You haven't told me what you're doing in Steeple Bumpley.
Just making a passing sojourn.
You mean you've come to stay?
Stay for a while. Somewhere over yonder is my little nest. I hope you will frequently drop in when off duty.
And what made you suddenly decide to come taking little nests in these parts?
Jeeves wanted to do with fishing.
Oh?
Yes, he tells me it's admirable here. You find the hook and the fish do the rest.
I see. That is your statement, is it? Jeeves wanted to do a bit of fishing.
That's right.
Oh. Well, I'll tell you what you wanted to do, young blasted Worcester. A bit of snake in the grassing.
Snake in the whatting?
Grassing.
I don't follow you.
Then I'll make it clearer. You've come here to sneak round Florence.
My dear chap.
I may as well tell you that I was not at all satisfied with your evidence, with what you said, when I saw you yesterday in that jeweler's shop. You stated that you had known Florence.
Just one moment, Stilton. I'm sorry to interrupt, but do we bandy a woman's name?
Yes, we do, and bloody well keep on bandying it.
Oh, righto, righto. I just wanted to know.
You stated that you had known Florence only slightly. Pretty well was the exact expression you used, and it seemed to me that your manner was suspicious. So, when I got back, I saw her and questioned her about you. She confessed that you and she had once been engaged.
Yes, yes, that's right. Yes, it all comes back to me now. Yes, we were long ago.
Not so long ago.
Well, it seems like long ago.
Oh?
Yes.
Is that so?
Positively.
The whole thing's over, eh?
Definitely.
Nothing between you now?
Not a thing.
Then how do you account for the fact that she gives you a copy of her novel and writes to Bertie with Love from Florence in it?
Oh. How did you know that?
You had the book with you when you came into that jeweler's shop. You left it on the counter and I looked inside.
Oh.
Well?
Well, I was in this bookshop, and she came in.
You had an assignation with her in a bookshop?
No, just an accidental meeting.
I see, and you've come down here to arrange another?
Yes, good Lord, no.
Do you seriously expect me to believe that you aren't trying to steal her from me?
But nothing can be further from my thoughts, old man.
Don't call me old man!
Righto, if you don't like it, righto, yes. The whole thing, officer, is one of those absurd misunderstandings. As I was starting to tell you, I was in this bookshop.
Oh, damn the bookshop, Worcester! Damn the bookshop! I'm not interested in a bookshop! The point is that you have come down here to make a snake in the grass of yourself, and I'm not going to have it! I have just one thing to say to you, Worcester. Get out!
But I can't.
What do you mean? What do you mean? You have no business here?
Yes, I have. Old Boko. Yes. Old Boko. I'm acting for him in a rather delicate matter. As you possibly may know, my Uncle Percy is endeavouring to put the B on his union with Nobby, and I've promised the young couple that I will plead for them. This will, of course, involve my remaining in statu.
Pa!
No, not pa, quo. That's the word I'm trying to think of. You can't plead with an uncle by marriage unless you're in statu quo.
I don't believe a word of it. You plead? What's the good of you pleading? As if anything you could say would have any weight with anybody. I repeat, Booster, clear out. Push off. Remove your beastly presence. Pop back to your London residence and stay there. And do it quick. Otherwise...
Yes?
Just otherwise.
He hardly needed to say. The menacing way in which he hopped on his bicycle and pedalled off spoke louder than words. In fact, I don't think I've ever seen anyone pedal with such a sinister touch to the ankle work, and as I drove on to Wee Nook, I felt profoundly thankful that the only present for Florence in my coat pocket at that moment was from Aunt Agatha. You can't be too careful how you stir up policemen, and a gift from me at this juncture, if Stilton had heard of it, would, I felt sure, have led to his tearing me limb from limb. Anyway, Wee Nook proved to be a decentish little shack, situated in agreeable surroundings. A bit ye olde, but otherwise all right. It looked, in short, as I subsequently learned was the case, as if it had formerly been inhabited by an elderly female of good family who kept cats. But as I walked in, I became aware that there was more in this joint than met the eye. Odd noises were in progress somewhere near at hand. Here a bang, there a crash, suggesting the presence of a poltergeist or what not. The sounds seemed to proceed from the other side of the door at the end of the hall, and I was hastening thither to investigate when I took a toss over a pail which had been placed in the fairway. And I just picked myself up, rubbing the spot, when the door opened and there entered a small boy with a face like a ferret. It was Florence's little brother, Edwin, the Boy Scout.
Oh, hello, Bertie.
Oh, hello, you frightful young squirt. What are you doing here?
Tidying up.
Huh, was it you who left that bally pail there?
Where?
In the middle of the hall.
Cool. Yes, I remember now. I put it there to be out of the way.
I see. Well, you'll be amused to learn that I've nearly broken my leg.
I say, have you really? This is a bit of buns. I can give you first aid.
No, you jolly well can't.
But if you bust your leg...
I haven't bust my leg.
You said you had.
A mere figure of speech.
Well, you may have sprained your ankle.
I haven't sprained my ankle.
I can do first aid for contusions.
I haven't got any contusions. Stand back.
Can I bandage you?
You'll get a thick ear if you try.
You may get gangrene.
I anticipate no such contingency.
You look silly if you get gangrene.
No, I shan't. I look fine.
I knew a chap who bumped his leg and it turned black and had to be cut off at the knee.
You do seem to mix with the most extraordinary people.
I could turn the cold tap on it.
No, you couldn't.
Oh. Then I suppose I'll be getting back to the kitchen. I'm going to do the chimney. Needs a jolly good clearing out. This place would have been a frightful mess if it hadn't been for me.
Oh, how do you mean, if it hadn't been for you, you complacent young poison sack? I'll bet you've been spreading ruin and desolation on all sides.
I've been tidying up! Well, I'll go and do that chimney, shall I?
Do it, if it pleases you, till your eyes bubble.
Righto. Cool! Hey! Did you drop this?
What? What? Oh, my gosh. Yes. Give it to me at once. It must have fallen out of my pocket when I tripped over that blasted pail. Thanks, Edwin.
What was it?
It's a brooch. Just a brooch. Birthday present for Florence.
Birthday present?
Yes, a brooch.
Shall I take it to her?
No, thanks.
I will if you like.
No, thanks.
Well, it would save you the trouble.
No, thanks. I don't let it out of my hands. I'll run it across and deliver it this evening. Well. Well, young Edwin, eh? Smart piece of work, that. You rendered me a signal service finding that parcel. They certainly train you sprouts to keep your eyes open. What? Tell me, how have you been all this while? All right? No colds, colics, or other juvenile ailments, eh? Splendid. I should hate to feel that you were suffering in any way. Decent of you to suggest putting my leg under the tap. Greatly appreciate. I wish I had a drink to offer you. You must come up and see me sometime when I'm settled.
Cool. Tar. Well, I'll go and do that chimney now.
Jolly good, jolly good. And I shall have a gasper in the garden.
Cheerio. Bertie!
Yes?
If the chimney's blocked, can I blow the soot out?
Do so, by all means.
Tar!
Ah. Oof. Edwin? What do you mean? Blow the soot out? Oh, my golly! Wee Nook's gone up in flames.
In Steeple Bumpley, the parts were played as follows. Jeeves, Michael Horden, Bertie Wooster, Richard Briers, Boko Fiddleworth, Jonathan Cecil, Edwin the Boy Scout, Denise Breyer, and Stilton Cheesewright, Michael Kilgareth. Joy in the Morning by P.G. Woodhouse was adapted for radio by Chris Miller. The programme was produced by Simon Brett.